Welcome to another episode of Evidence-Based GI, an ACG podcast. I'm Dr. Noor Syed, a first-year gastroenterology fellow at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. I'm here with Dr. Christopher Velez, an associate program director for the Advanced Fellowship in Functional and Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders at the Center for Neurointestinal Health at Massachusetts General Hospital at Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts. Today, we're discussing a fascinating study titled Esophageal Leak in Planus, the Efficiency and Safety of Tacrolimus in Reducing Inflammation and Need for Dilation. This is by Cureja and the group, published in the December 2024 issue of Clinical and Translational Gastroenterology. Dr. Velez, welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Really excited to discuss this article.
Great. Let's start with the basics. This was a retrospective cohort study looking at a rare and often under-recognized condition, esophageal leak in planus, which we might refer to as ELP. This poses a significant challenge in both the diagnosis and management. The authors asked whether using low-dose oral tacrolimus could safely and efficiently reduce esophageal inflammation and the need for repeated dilations in patients with ELP. The study included 22 adults with confirmed ELP at a single tertiary center, which was divided evenly between those who received tacrolimus and those who received other therapies or no therapy at all. Notably, all the patients had undergone an EGD with biopsies and Bugi dilation, and disease severity was measured using a novel tool called the Esophageal Leak in Planus Severity Score.
This is a perfect encapsulation of what the authors were trying to study. And what stood out for me about this article was that it's tackling a major gap in our field. So ELP is a rare condition. As such, it's hard to develop guidelines or have standardized treatment approaches. There has been sort of more case report-based literature suggesting that tacrolimus, while not traditionally used for esophageal inflammatory diseases, may be a useful agent in the treatment of ELP. And this study was one of the largest ones that I've come across that addresses this important gap in the literature.
Yeah, and what's interesting is while both groups eventually reached the same maximum dilation, which was 16 millimeters, the tacrolimus-treated group required fewer dilations over time. And even though this difference didn't reach statistical significance, it is suggestive of the potential antifibrotic benefits. And what else really stands out is the important safety profile. Tacrolimus was generally well tolerated, with only two patients who discontinued due to very mild lab abnormalities.
I agree. I think that this is an article that shows that you can use tacrolimus successfully in this condition.
So let's dig into a few questions. Dr. Velez, in your clinical experience, how do you approach the use of off-label immunosuppressants like tacrolimus in rare esophageal disorders like ELP, especially given the small sample sizes and the lack of randomized data?
So I think as someone who has a neurogastromotility focus, particularly for esophageal disorders, occasionally I'll come across people with a complaint of dysphagia that I have to manage either with dilation or with some type of or swallowed steroids, particularly if it's eosinophilic esophagitis. So I normally don't prescribe tacrolimus for any of the conditions of motility or neurogastrointestinal disease, but I am lucky to work with wonderful liver colleagues who have helped me figure out the correct dosing of tacrolimus. And it's challenging because this is a medication that unless you're in the transplant space, you're not really using as a gastroenterologist. So in that instance, because these are people that typically have failed other agents, this is a case of an agent being considered perhaps off-label, but in a patient who's having a history of repeated impactions, that this is what would motivate me to move up consideration for tacrolimus for ELP. And it's shared decision-making. And I think often when patients are faced with something as catastrophic as not being able to eat or having to undergo multiple procedures over the rest of their life, they're looking for anything to try to reduce disease burden and procedural burden.
Yeah, I love that you have this really patient-centered approach to really involving the patient in that shared decision-making. I think that's really key. You know, this study also introduced this new endoscopic scoring system, which they termed the ELPSS. How do you see this tool fitting into clinical practice?
I think it's a step in the right direction. I think that we're accustomed for other inflammatory diseases of the GI tract having scoring systems that can reduce or eliminate some of the subjectivity that exists when we're trying to quantify disease severity. I think that this is a bit of a small sample size, so I think it would benefit from a greater attempt to recruit a larger cohort to validate it. But realistically speaking, it's probably going to be too challenging to do for a condition that's as rare as this. But I think it's useful and a step in the right direction.
Great. And in the commentary of our summary, you mentioned that this paper really resonated with a real patient case of yours. Do you think you could share that story?
Absolutely. So I think part of the reason why I had wanted to discuss this article is that the listeners for this podcast are less likely than even I was in terms of thinking about tacrolimus for management of ELP. So I had a patient that was referred from the community to see me who had been having difficulty getting her esophagus opened up due to a pretty severe case of ELP. And the gastroenterologist, as well-intentioned as he was, and after he had pursued repetitive treatments, had suggested that maybe the best way to ensure nutritional intake was to place a gastrostomy tube, which my patient was not too excited to consider, so she wanted to discuss other options. And when I first started meeting with her, I was having to dilate her every 6, every 8, every 12 weeks. It was a cadence that was problematic for her. It would be 5 or 6 hours round trip driving to my institution. And more importantly, she would start having these worsening of symptoms in between dilations. So I eventually ended up settling on tacrolimus after discussing with one of my mentors here at MGH, who had personal experience using tacrolimus when he was at another institution. And I decided to go along that pathway. I discussed risks, I discussed benefits, I discussed sort of thinking about nephrotoxicity, neurotoxicity, although one would assume that with the smaller doses that you're using for tacrolimus, more topical, less likely to be absorbed at systemically high levels for a lot of those related complications. That was a discussion that I had with the patient. And eventually we settled on her taking tacrolimus, and it ended up being that we could start spacing out these dilations to every 6 months, which was a big improvement in her quality of life. So she went from possibly being fed for the rest of her life through a gastrostomy tube to now being able to enjoy a full PO diet with the foods that she wanted to eat with use of tacrolimus. So as much as I was out of my comfort zone, it was helpful to push myself out of that comfort zone. And I imagine some colleagues of ours in this profession listening to this podcast may have been in a similar situation. And that's why I think this is a great article to highlight.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that anecdote. I think it certainly is something that a lot of us will benefit from hearing. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Velez. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. For more evidence-based GI, be sure to subscribe below and follow our podcast. You can read the full issue on the ACG website at gi.org. And don't forget to check your inbox for our monthly emails. Thanks, and see you next time.